Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase live here at Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. Tonight's the Predators and Calgary Flames. 7 o'clock puck drop. Pregame at 6, everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. We appreciate Terry Crisp for sitting down at the table with us last hour. Fun conversation with him to kind of close out hour number two. And it's always a fun conversation with our next guest, Richard Deitch from The Athletic. Richard, how you doing? It's been a while.
Yeah, what's up, guys? How are you?
How's 2020 treating you?
Cold.
Yeah.
Snowy.
Yeah, I bet.
Otherwise, okay.
Has it been kind of, has it been a mild winter to this point?
Yeah, for Toronto sort of purposes, it's been a mild winter. But, a mild winter in Toronto would be Armageddon in Nashville.
Yes, I think
yes,
so.
Yes, it would.
It'd be a lot of days
shut down. The city.
Yeah. A lot of school closings.
For years, we talked to you when you lived in New York, and you wrote some stuff on The Athletic. Of course, we just celebrated the 40-year anniversary of Miracle on Ice, and just that whole conversation, I want you to go into detail. In fact, I just watched it again the other night just because, and it's a great movie, and obviously the story is fantastic. But what did you learn, talking about that again, reliving that?
Well, let's get specific, Richard, because one of the things you did, I saw you did a one-on-one with Ken Dryden, who
was Al Michaels,
as you kind of pointed out at the start, was not the obvious choice to be that. He's a Canadian guy. He's playing for the Montreal Canadiens. So he's not like a U.S. hero or anything, even though he's a really – great analyst. I loved hearing him describe to you, Richard, the art of an upset, right? He put it into such great words, how upsets usually happen.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for, reading that and the PR hype on it here. Yeah, I mean, my thought was, everybody was going to talk to Al Michaels, and understandably so. It's the most famous call, I think, in the history of United States sports broadcasting. It'd be tough to sort of find a bigger call, a more momentous call than Do You Believe in Miracles? Yes. And so, Dryden was always interesting to me just because he was the analyst on that game. I don't think a lot of people remember that. He was just coming off retirement from the Canadiens, one of the great goalies of all time. He's only 31, so pretty young guy when he did that. And the thing about Dryden was, he was not your average athlete. He had already passed the bar by the time he retired. He was taking additional bar courses during the Lake Placid Olympics. He eventually became a member of Canadian Parliament. He eventually wrote 7 books, including some bestsellers. So he's just a very interesting sort of introspective guy. And it was fascinating to hear his observations about how that came together. And, the part you're describing is his, in terms of the anatomy of an upset, he had said that, he thought he had a good perspective on him because the Canadians were a dominant team, almost like the Soviet Union was when the U.S. college kids played them. And he sort of just described this anatomy of an upset of the way to really upset a team isn't to go out and sort of blow them out. It almost never happens that way. His sort of thesis was that what you want to do is you want to stay close, but actually not necessarily have a lead until late because you're really trying to psychologically sort of get into the minds of the dominant team where eventually come, at least in hockey, the third period, that's when you ambush them. And then you start, you start to put them in a position that they've never been in, which is a position of playing from behind. So it was fascinating to hear him discuss that 40 years later. He'll never be obviously on a bigger broadcast than that one. And I think the reason that one sort of stands out, obviously it has to do with geopolitics and the Soviet Union, but it just, I think because we live in such polarizing times, I think people have a fond memory of a sporting event that really brought everybody together. And, I don't know if that could happen again. You're never going to have college kids beating pros again, essentially. So you might not have the similar political moment. So I think that's why that thing always stands out is because I just don't think it can be duplicated and certainly not in our lifetime.
Isn't it crazy? Because, obviously if you haven't done your homework, you don't remember and you don't really know the inner workings of that, to know that you know, you always think that was it. You know, that was for the gold medal. That was not. And what? Right. How different would it feel or look? Or, I mean, that is, you know, maybe the greatest upset ever. But yet, if you don't follow it up and finish it, and nobody remembers the follow-up game. Nobody remembers the gold medal. Everybody remembers that game. But what would that have done to their legacy if they would have gone out there, you know, and laid an egg and lost to Finland?
Yeah, great point. And the other thing, too, is, and this is just the reality of the situation, if the movie Miracle wasn't made, I don't know how many people under the age of 30, 35 would even have any connection to it. I think so many people who are of a certain age now connect to that moment simply because of the Kurt Russell film. You know, they're able to sort of live vicariously, if you weren't alive, through that. So I think that's another it's a very good film. I think that's just another reason why that moment sort of continues to serve as something in the United States, just because of that film. But yeah, I mean, the story changes irrevocably if they don't beat Finland in the, you know, what turns out to be the gold medal game. And I think, and maybe Willie is a hockey guy who checked that, if they tied Finland, Russia would have ended up winning with more points. So could you imagine that? Imagine that game ends in a tie and you get the silver medal after beating the Russians.
Yeah, I mean, that would Richard, I didn't. You had kind of a footnote in your thing. I know that was something, and this is what I love about when we go back through this. You learn things you didn't know before, that Al Michaels and Ken Dryden, after the 5 o'clock start, the first game of the doubleheader, U.S. versus USSR, they have to do the other semifinal, the anticlimactic, at least in the States, Sweden versus Finland.
Right.
And that was a tie. I thought somebody had to win. That ended up in a tie. And so Finland plays after tying Sweden, I guess what, the day before or 2 days before? Weird.
Yeah, the way that particular tournament sort of had points was very odd. There wasn't, I mean, somebody could obviously correct me if I'm wrong on this, but there wasn't sudden death. I don't think it was, you know, those games could end in ties. It was sort
right.
of based on a point system. I don't know what the tiebreaker was, but yeah, totally. I mean, it could have, you know, I mean, imagine like the U.S. tied the Soviets and like how you would think of that. You know, wouldn't exactly be a miracle.
Crazy.
You know,
yeah, I mean, that could have been very possible. And like Finland.
Listen, if the game is so great to watch, and I would suggest anybody watch it for the first time or rewatch it again. But, you know, there were moments late in that game that Russians were very close to tying in, including I think they hit a post fairly late. You know, the one thing I would recommend for your audience, if they've never seen it, just because it's so fascinating to me, is there's a 30 for 30 that actually ESPN just recently played that has the game from the Soviet perspective, and it really centers around Slava Fetisov going back to Lake Placid and sort of reliving it. I think it's called The Miracles of Men. I think that's what it's called. But that, and there's also a movie Red Army on this, but that to me actually is even more interesting than the U.S. players and their story, because I'm totally fascinated just by how the sort of Soviet Union approached that game and then what it ultimately meant after they lost. And it actually meant a lot more gold medals, but their perspective on losing is really, really fascinating. And then of course, you know, 10 years later, the everything opens up. Russian players are allowed to play in the NHL, and look where we are now in 2020 with a Russian-born player taking aim at Wayne Gretzky's goal-scoring record.
It was Of Miracles and Men, I believe, is what it was. I was just watching it the other night.
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah, it's very good. Richard, one other footnote as a person who can appreciate play-by-play, Al Michaels said this. I had no idea. And I don't know if you interviewed him or this was something you picked up for another interview, but he said that because it was not a state-of-the-art broadcast situation in terms of the booth or anything like that, they're sort of amongst the crowd. The noise level is crazy. And Al Michaels is saying for some reason some switch got pulled and he's hearing all the talk amongst the TV producers in the truck. Imagine trying to have any kind of conversation with somebody talking in your ear. And so he's doing that down the stretch of this amazing game, and he's trying to keep the concentration. That's the greatness of a play-by-play guy right there.
Yeah, I mean, insane, and that is true. I think they pressed some kind of all-call key, and so supposedly in his ear he was hearing everything. which again sort of gives you some more perspective and context on just how great a call that is. Again, another thing, if you're sort of a broadcasting nerd, that just is like inconceivable in 2020. The way they did that hockey tournament is they would like pop into the tournament between like a large 3-hour block on ABC. So like Michaels and Dryden had to call the games, but a lot of their game, a lot of what they called, we never saw. It'd be like Jim McKay going, okay, let's go to the Olympic Arena. It's the second period. The United States leads Czech Republic 4-2. Let's pick up Al Michaels and Kent Dryden on the call. And then they just go to him. And then if ABC had to go to commercial, they just go to commercial during hockey play. I mean, it's sort of just insane to think about like what and how they were calling that game. And I don't think, and again, some historian can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think ABC played the entire Russia game either. I think they played, you know, the majority of it. But there was absolutely live play in the U.S.-Russia game that was not shown live to the American audience, even though it was on tape. So it was not shown live on tape delay to the American audience. And again, just in 2020, I mean, could you imagine, like, the public, like, sort of, like, having to deal with not seeing an entire sort of full game? It's like, all right, we're not going to show the second quarter of the Titans game. We'll be back to
We're going to switch away while this third down and eight is going on the 10-yard line. It's unbelievable
people
to think about
freak
that.
Out.
It's a third and eight, but we're going to head to curling for a couple of minutes. We'll be back.
All right. Richard, what's it been like, the media fallout in Toronto in the wake of the David Ayers story? Because, you know, a guy from Toronto beats the Maple Leafs. It'd be an amazing story if he had played for the Maple Leafs, but because he's playing against the Maple Leafs, I understand it's been a really interesting, odd dynamic up there.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a combination of when you celebrate like this amazing kind of Disney story, and this guy coming in and getting a win. I mean, it's a sort of a once in a lifetime thing, first emergency goalie to get a win. At the same time, you know, you're also the team that lost to an emergency goalie, so you know, there's a lot of columnists and sports talk people sort of, you know, who also killed the Leafs as well. What they're really helped by, honestly, is they played one of the best games of the year after that by beating the Lightning, holding on 4-3. So the Ayers thing does feel like, a couple of weeks ago, even though I know it was only a couple of days ago, because they did have the win against the Lightning. And then tonight, I think, if I'm right, they play the Panthers, which is, that's essentially the team they are competing against for that final spot in their division. So the you may sort of get a little bit of the air stuff again if somehow they lose to the Panthers badly, but if they win, I think their response to this becomes more of the story as opposed to them losing to an emergency goalie.
Richard Deitch is with us from The Athletic, and you know, a story that I think all of us are following: where is Tony Romo going to go? He's a free agent. Is he going to stay with CBS? Is he going to go to ESPN? What will Monday Night Football look like for ESPN? What's the latest that you're hearing on the Romo front?
Well, I think the decision's coming pretty soon. CBS has an exclusive window to negotiate with him. That window exists now, and I'm sure those negotiations are happening. So I think within the next couple of weeks, you will hear from the Romo camp, or you will hear from the winning camp, or the losing camp will leak, which is often what happens. The result of this, I've sort of been all along on the record saying I think Tony's going to stay with CBS. I realize money talks, and I have no doubt ESPN may even offer him more money than CBS ultimately does. But I think given the CBS schedule, given that Romo has a great relationships with the producer of that broadcast, with Jim Nantz, given that I think there's a comfort level for Romo in terms of he knows what he's dealing with in terms of that crew, and I think that's a better job, personally. I just think the games are better on CBS, the schedule's better on CBS, and when you work for CBS, you don't have to like do SportsCenter, and you don't have to do this other stuff. So I think if the money is close, and I would expect it to be, I think CBS retains Romo. And then the big question is, if that happens, what is ESPN's plan B? Because I think plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D is to put Tony Romo as your analyst and just put somebody as the play-by-play person. If it's not Romo, man, I don't think ESPN wants to return to McFarland and Tessitore, but that they may not have many more options.
One more on my end. A few weeks ago, the Daytona 500 happened, and they had to move it to Monday. We know what happened with Ryan Newman and that crash at the end. I know it's a tough situation for Fox Sports to be in because you don't know. You don't have the information. You don't know what exactly happened. We saw the crash. We all feared the worst. Ryan Newman is, of course, now okay. But what were your thoughts on how Fox handled the end of that broadcast with the Ryan Newman situation?
Yeah, listen, I know people, you know, you can't win if you're Fox, like, in that situation, to be honest.
Right.
Because there are people who are like, why are you not telling me more about the crash? Why are you not re-showing me the last lap? And then there are always going to be others who say, do not show me this. This is awful. You're just, you know, you're taking advantage of the situation. You're being exploitive. There's, like, no winning solution for Fox. This is just my personal take. It doesn't mean I'm right. It's just it's a totally subjective viewpoint. I think you have to just – you're ultimately sort of showing news, in my opinion. So I think you have to show what happened. And I –
Well, we lost Richard.
We just lost him. Okay. Yeah. Well, I think he was wrapping up anyway. Good stuff from Richard Deitch from The Athletic.
Go read it. I would like to have heard the rest of that.
That's... I know, me too.
Yeah. We may have him back. Just 1 second. Although that did not sound good. That sounded like a zap, like the phone just ran out of
batteries. Battery ran out.
Yeah, like you got zapped as in. Plug me in and charge me.
Well, we heard a few beeps. You know, you hear the beeps. Beeps are never good. But no, it's good, yeah, because we talked to Jamie Little, you know, right after, mm-hmm. so I was just curious of his thoughts.
It was very interesting to get her perspective.
Mm. Yeah.
Right after that. That was really good. I don't think we're going to have Richard back, so.
We're in a four-corner stall.
Let's just say thanks. It's always good to catch up with
thanks,
Richard.
Thanks, Richard.
Got a lot of good stuff in there.
We will come back with more here live from Pete and Terry's Tavern on ESPN 102.5 The Game.